pretend to be tough, pretend to be mean, pretend to be cool, pretend to have my act together, but really underneath, cowardly. Not meek, like my dad. Found out she was okay and all that was good, and I remember when I made amends to her. You know what she said? Don't worry about it, I love you. She got up and hugged me. You're not supposed to hug violent people. You're supposed to run away from them. You're supposed to make sure that everyone in the whole family unit knows that person's violent. So when that person shows up, they can all feel bad about it. They can all feel ostracized. Right? Not my sister. Not my sister. Get up and hug me. When I had 5 years of sobriety, she and my brother-in-law surprised me, came to our home group meeting, got my chip. And it was my sister and my brother-in-law and their child, Bridget, who I'm godfather to. I'm godfather to their child. Stuff's been in my life forever. Couldn't see it. My sister called me on the drive back to Chicago in tears. Tears. Now, I want you to hear the pronouns because they may not mean anything to you, but they're the thing that impacts me the most. Here's what she said. The best thing that happened to our family is that you joined AA. The best thing that happened to our family is that you joined AA. I don't know how you interpret that, but if you knew my sister, this is what she'd mean. Everyone loved you so much, and they were so hurt and scared by the life you were living that we finally have peace now that you have peace. She was mourning for me. And oddly enough, she got comforted when I got sobriety. It's crazy. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. When I was in grammar school, we were taught by the Dominican nuns. And I got to tell you, they were the finest human beings on the planet. They all wore white, long whites, right? Their big scapula, the big white scapula, and they had these rosary beads that almost went to the floor. It's like they had perfect math on the length, so it would just like right over the floor. Wouldn't touch the floor, just right over the floor, man. Like there's got to be a class somewhere in the convents to make the perfect length, you know? Full habit. And those nuns prayed for us every day. And they fasted for us every day. And they did service for us every day. They were our teachers and our mentors and our friends. They taught us how to respect authority, how to be kind to each other. We made their life not so fun sometimes, but that's what kids do. But their example. And this idea of being satisfied. At the school I went to, we were at Mass all the time, and all the nuns would sit together when it was summer, and they would sit with the students when it was school time. But we were always at Mass. Like, this was something we did growing up. We were always at Mass. I'm telling you, when those nuns came back from communion, the idea that they were not satisfied, you got to be kidding me. The sense of peace, the joy, the radiance coming off their faces. For all of the challenges that their life were raising idiots like me, they were satisfied by God's grace. They were satisfied by the very Eucharist we all shared earlier today. They were fed on God Himself. And when He is our food, we do not starve, no matter how challenging it is to hunger and thirst for righteousness, if He is our food. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall be shown mercy. There's many great days in the history of the United States of America. 4th of July, right? Every 4 years we inaugurate a new president. I mean, there's a lot of amazing days in our history. I think we can all agree, though, if we go through the history of the United States and really all North American history, we'll find one singular day that stands out almost above the rest, and that was January 26, 1986. That was the night the Bears won the Super Bowl. And or as we say in Chicago, the night the Bears won the Super Bowl. And so I had yet to find sobriety on the greatest night in American history. And I was, there's some priests here, so I'll use the term loosely. I was dating a gal. And we were walking back from the bar that we were in on campus. Went to a little school called Lewis University in Romeoville, Illinois. And we're coming back from this place called the Flyers Den, which was a bar on campus. And I'm having a hard time navigating the concrete. Anybody ever been in that little deal where it seems like, who engineered this, right? And it hit me, this guilt hit me. And I'm like, I got to go to confession. She's like, it's 2 a.m. I go, I'm just telling you, I got to go to confession. She's like, you're drunk, just go home. I heard that a lot, by the way. That was sort of a regular theme. You're drunk, just go home, right? No, I'm going to confession. I knock on the rectory door at 2 a.m. This guy named Father Phil Capella comes downstairs. Hair just crazy. Bathrobe. He doesn't know if the campus is on fire. He has no idea what's going on, but the good man opened the door. And I said something that if you had subtitles could probably figure out was, Father, I need to go to confession, right? My diction was a little challenged that evening. And he says, we do that on Wednesdays at 7 p.m., son. And I said, you don't understand, Father. You don't understand. The way I feel right now, I'm not going to be there Wednesday. It's now or never. Right? Now, that's a very callous, very arrogant, pretty narcissistic thing to say to anybody, especially at 2 a.m. to a good priest. He's like, I'll meet you in the chapel. This man comes over. He opens the door. He said, do you want to go to the confessional? Or do you want to sit here in the pew? I said, we could just sit here in the pew. He goes, your girlfriend is right there, you know. And she's right there. And I'm like, no, it's good. It'll be okay. Just for the guys. Don't ever go to confession with your girlfriend. It's sort of relationship suicide. It just ended really quick after that, which is another story for another day. But the point is, this man sat there and gave me absolution at 2 a.m. Fast forward a few days. The following weekend, my friends are coming back from church. They had church. I had a whole bunch of stuff going on, so I missed church. Really important stuff, you know. And they said, hey, Father gave this amazing homily, and it was about this student and blah, blah, blah. And he kind of went, and as soon as I heard student, I didn't hear anything else they said. I have no idea what it was. Right? I, with all the humility a narcissist can muster, knew that this priest was clearly talking about me in his homily. Now, he was in charge of the spiritual development of 7,500 kids, but I knew it was me. And I'm telling you, I raged on this guy. I raged on him. Every guy in this room, some girls probably have seen it too, maybe heard about it. We have this thing is who's the bigger guy. That's what we used to call it on the south side of Chicago. It's basically $2 seeing who has the biggest horns. And I'm telling you, when I play that game, I generally try to win it. Right? Not because I'm tough, but because I'm afraid. Because I'm scared you'll win. Right? Because I don't feel very strong, so I got to make you feel weaker than I feel like I am on the inside. And so I see this priest at one end of the hall, and I walked right at him so he'd have to move out of my way. Hi, Mike, how you doing? Wouldn't even talk to the guy. Criticized him publicly in front of some of his students from his class. Drank my way out of university that year. And I won an award before I left, and I had to go back and give the award to the next student who won that award the next year. The administration was not thrilled about that deal. That's the deal, and so I had to do it. So I start drinking about 6:30, 7 o'clock with my buddies from school. After not being there, it was good. It was like a house warm. It was like an old friend week, right? So it gets going. I show up at the dance, show up at the deal where I got to give this gift or this award to someone else. And I give that award, and I'm sloppy, maggoty drunk. And this place used to sell these things called baby buds. We used to call them baby buds. They're like $5 for 3 8-ounce bottles of Budweiser. They were like little baby bottles of Budweiser. And we're standing at the end of the bar where all the garbage is, and there's hundreds of these things just piled up everywhere. And I see this priest come by. And I went, hey, Father. And this good man walks over. Hey, Mike, how are you? Geez, it's been a little while since I've seen you around campus. You doing okay? No, I don't go to school there anymore, Father. I said, you know what's weird, though? Just cut him off. Semicircle of my friends. I said, you know what's really... I said, I'll tell you, Father, I have not seen you out there dancing. I mean, it's probably been a long time since you've been with a woman, Father. Have you forgotten how to ask? Let me help you. And I whistled the gal over. And I said, why don't you go out on the dance floor and dance with Father? It's been a long time since he's been with a woman. He's kind of forgotten how to ask. Why don't you just take the initiative and bring him out there? And he looked at me and said, Mike, what are you doing? I said, you don't like brunettes? No problem. There was a redhead walking by. I whistled her over. Did the same thing. He said to me, Mike, knock it off. Forcefully. Which I did not like. Why? Because I'm afraid, not because I'm tough. There's almost nobody who's tough. Tons of fear people. Almost very few tough. And I turned around and I grabbed an armful of those empty beer bottles. And I poked this priest in the chest. And I said, let me tell you something, Father. When I tell you to dance, I mean dance. And I began to throw these beer bottles at this priest's feet so he would jump up in the air to the beat of the music. Humiliated this godly man in front of all of his associates, in front of his students, in front of the whole university. And I laughed about it and walked away. I get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. He is absolutely on my eighth step. I don't even know, what do you do with that? How do you make that right? So I call this man up. Couldn't find him. Went to the university. He had moved to another place called St. Xavier College, which is on like 103rd and Pulaski and Oak Lawn. And I'm from Chicago, so we give addresses. I'm sorry, I can't help it. It's just like, right. People are like, where are you from? Chicago. Oh, where? North or south? South. Oh, really? Where? It's like southwest or south? Yeah, southwest. Yeah, right. What parish? St. Christina. Oh, yeah, okay, I know right where you're at. Like, we got to drill it all the way down. It's too big of a city, right? So that's just, I'm sorry I do that, but I do that. So they don't know where he's at. He had moved to some other deal out in a place called New Lenox, a little suburb. I get home and I call 411. Just talk about shot in the dark. This was back when they would say, you know, do you want us to dial the phone for 75 cents? I don't remember that, right? So I just took the number down. I called back. And it's him. He picks up the phone. And I was like, hey, Father, it's Michael Donnelly. I don't know if you remember me. And I remember you, right? He remembered me. And then he says, how you doing these days? Well, a lot better. Good. What's going on? What can I do for you? Well, Father, I don't know if you remember. Actually, I'm pretty sure you do remember, but I'm just saying. There was this night at St. George's Serbian Hall when I was so out of control that I did this. And I told him, I replayed the event for him. He said, I remember that. And I said, Father, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and in this fellowship, we try to make amends for the things we've done wrong. And I got to tell you, I have no idea how to make that right. I have no clue how I can do that. And he goes, huh. Tell you what, before we get into all that, what are you doing these days for work? I told him what I did for a living. Good, you got a family? I said, yeah, like, man, I tell you what, I don't know what it is with us drunks, Father. We marry up, like we marry way up. Like my wife is just amazing. Well, that's good. Any kid? We talked for like 15 minutes on his questions alone. That's not supposed to happen. And then he says, I'll tell you what you can do. He said, would you pray for me? Would you pray for me and my family? That's how you can make this right. If every time you tell this story anytime you want, if you think it'll encourage someone else to make amends. I got to tell you, I don't know how that falls on you, but the humility of this man to say you can publicly share how you humiliated me, if it will spiritually alter someone else's existence, feel free. Go ahead. It would be an honor to be the butt of your story if it helps someone else change and meet God. Wow. I got to tell you, I think these Beatitudes and the God who spoke them because they're true. They're not true because he spoke them. They're true and he spoke them. I think these things have been in all of our lives all the time. We just couldn't see them. So tonight, when I go to bed, I'm going to get on my knees. And I'm going to pray for Father Phil and his family. Because that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Blessed are the merciful, right? Blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God. There's a guy named Father Ed Pierce who heard my fifth step. And that man took the chaos running in my soul in that fifth step. And with just some words and some kindness and some looks and a friendship that carried on past that fifth step, he did some soul surgery on me and he gave me some peace. He put peace together inside of me. I don't know how that takes place, but it did. I'm moving along here. Blessed are they who are persecuted. They shall be called children of God. There was a guy, I don't even remember his name, but he was a priest in my parish when I was a little boy. And he had just horrible diction. And as little kids, we were like second and third grade, we'd like make fun of him. Right? You know how kids do, right? Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm the only bad kid. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. You're all looking at me like, no, we were good children. Please. Do you forget where you're at? Can we just go there for a second? We all know where we're at. Okay. What had happened was he was in a concentration camp in Poland. And the Nazis cut up his tongue so he couldn't share the gospel. That man had mass all the time. And as little kids, we're like, he said, instead of the body of Christ. Right? We thought that was really hilarious. And then our good nuns, the Dominicans, got a hold of our earlobes and made sure we listened to him one time. Hey, this is why that's happening. You see, these Beatitudes, I'll bet you they were in each one of your lives just like they were in each one of mine. And I got to tell you, having the experience now of new eyeballs from the gift that always comes from working the 12 steps, from the gift that always comes from receiving Jesus in the Eucharist and being in a confessional and telling him how I don't deserve his love and he says, that's okay, I'm going to give it to you anyway. It lets you see stuff you couldn't see before. I want to encourage all of us before we hit the hay tonight to think about who were the examples of these Beatitudes in your life before you came to the spot you're at now, wherever that happens to be. How is God trying to reach out to you in the midst of your sin and your selfishness and your drunkenness or whatever the list is that is your list, right? Whatever he changed you from, how is he trying to get a hold of you before you let him catch you? What were the hounds of heaven that were chasing you disguised as? In my life, they were disguised as my mother and my father and my sister and Father Phil and Father Ed and this Polish priest who I can't even remember his name. We say in Alcoholics Anonymous that the number one thing we lack isn't sobriety, right? We all know what that is. We lack power. We lack power. That's what our book says. I think that's right. You see, what I thought I had when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous was a drinking problem. I did not, nor have I ever had a drinking problem. I have something much more sinister. It's called alcoholism. And alcoholism is made up of three different things: a physical allergy, a mind that lies to me, and a broken soul. And if I will let the hounds of heaven catch me, God promises he will fix that soul. And when he fixes that soul, I naturally think different things. And when I think different things, it's very likely I'll make better decisions. And if I make better decisions, I'll likely take better actions. And if I do that long enough, my life will get radically better. The story that I hope you hear this weekend isn't about some guy who came to AA and got his act together, because that's not true. What I hope you hear is that a guy that has no power to get his act together met a loving God whose job is, who does it every day, who gives people like me the power to have the opportunity to come and love people like you. Thanks for my life. God bless you.